World, are we ready?
Yep, now there.
There we go. The Agriculture, Rural Development, Finance and Policy Committee will come to order. For the record, quorum is present. Members, we'll start off today with a great honor to hear from some of our state FFA officers. It's FFA Day, and we want to acknowledge the great contribution our FFA programs bring across the state and nation. And Cole and Anna, I believe. And give them a greeting here from the Ag Committee. So welcome, officers. We appreciate having you here as ambassadors for agriculture. And please introduce yourself and what state position you hold and where you're from, and whatever else you would like to address us with. Welcome again.
Chair Washam and members of the committee, first, thank you so much for having us here today. It's been great to meet with some of you over the past 2 days, and we hope to continue our relations in the future. My name is Anna Ridenour, and I'm serving as this year's Minnesota FFA state reporter, and I'm from Dodge Center, Minnesota, so Dodge County down in southeast Minnesota. And I also have two of my teammates here with me up here, and then three others as well. One of them is currently giving greetings in the Education Committee as well. And FFA, for those who are not as familiar with the organization, is a youth-based leadership and agricultural organization where we provide members with the opportunity to really grow themselves and their potential in the community and in their career pathways. In Minnesota alone, we have 13,000 members and over 35,000 students who are in agriculture education and technical courses. So it's a great opportunity for members and students to be able to learn about their potential, learn about their interests, and maybe figure out what they want to do with the rest of their lives. And so when we're looking at across the state of Minnesota, we find members in every corner. We see them all the way from Thief River Falls, Minnesota, down to Caledonia, and from Mankato to Minneapolis. So it's great to see people of all backgrounds, of all interests, come together in this organization, because we know that come together to do great things for our community. And when we're looking at the future of FFA, we have three different components to the FFA organization and its FFA itself: work-based learning and supervised agricultural experiences, and then agriculture education in the classroom. And so it's a great opportunity to see what ways members can make the most out of their time in FFA. And as my FFA advisor and agriculture teacher would say, FFA is like a buffet. You can take what you want, leave what you don't want. But if you go to a buffet, you're not gonna go for just a couple of bites. You're gonna make your money's worth. And so it's great to see students be able to go outside of their comfort zone, explore what is in the future for them, and really make the most out of building connections with others and being of service to their community. So it's great being able to see what we can do as an organization to really change the pathway of our future and make a positive impact. Chair Westrom, members of the committee, I'm Nicole Kozalik, and I'm currently serving as the Minnesota State FFA Secretary. I'm from Northfield, Minnesota, which is about an hour south of here. And like Anna said, we all have many different backgrounds that brought us to this organization. And I would like to share with you my background. My parents are both heavily involved in the agricultural industry, and we have a family farm. But until I got into FFA, I didn't see myself in agriculture at all. I was actually very passionate about dance. So going to the farm, I just enjoyed the company with my cousins, with my parents, with my grandparents, but really loved dance. And that was my go-to. And I think actually when I was, the year before I joined FFA, I looked at my ag teacher, well, my now ag teacher and FFA advisor, and I said, I don't think I will join FFA. I don't see a place for myself. Despite that, my mom encouraged me to go to the FFA first ag class. And from that class, where I got to learn about everything agriculture, just a good bite into forestry and agronomy and animal science, I dove deep into the organization. It caught my interest, and I really saw that there is a place for everyone in agriculture, and that no matter your background, you can find an interest in FFA and in agriculture, which I think is really important as we see a lot of FFA chapters growing across the state as well as in the metro area. There's a place for everyone. And as teenagers in a weird society right now, we need a place of belonging, and that place is FFA. So really honored to be part of this organization and representing Minnesota FFA this year.
Thank you.
Chair Westrum, members of the committee. My name is Wyatt Halverson. I'm from Thief River Falls, Minnesota in Pennington County, currently serving as the vice president of the Minnesota FFA Association and the third and final part of the three-component model of ag education that I'll be talking about is work-based learning. And we have an acronym in that component model that is an SAE, which stands for Supervised Agricultural Experience. Of the 35,000 students in AFNR classes, the 13,000 that are in FFA all have an SAE or are all working towards their SAE, because the work-based learning is one of the arguably the most important part of the education. It's what hooks them. It's where they can learn real life skills that they need and transferable skills nonetheless about their actual job and really catapult them into the workforce. My story looks a little bit like this. We all know a youngster who says they want to be a veterinarian from the age 2, right? I was that youngster in my family. And through FFA, I was able to take classes in the classroom, number one. I was able to explore with all of the contests, the CDEs, the career development events, the leadership development events like public speaking, et cetera. The opportunities are endless. And then with my SAE or my work-based learning, I was able to get a job at our local veterinarian in town and work and gain career capital, and a system of a network for 3 years. I worked there for 3 years, and now I am studying animal science in college. So really our goal is to find these students, get them excited about agriculture, and push them through this pipeline and right into the workforce so they can contribute to this wonderful, wonderful system of agriculture, one of the biggest, if not the biggest, systems in Minnesota. And that's what our goal is.
Chair Westrum and members of the committee.
Go ahead.
We thank you for joining us today and allowing us to be able to share the story of FFA. And these are just a few stories, but just like the members across Minnesota, there's opportunity that's endless. And so we're really excited to continue to work with you and advocate for agriculture and advocate for youth and leadership positions, because we're really excited to make sure that the future of agriculture and the future of our world is bright. And with that, we'd like to open up for any questions about FFA or agriculture education.
Very good. Thank you, Anna, Nicole, and Wyatt. We can hear your enthusiasm, and as ambassadors for agriculture, that is very promising. Members, was there some questions? Senator Murphy, and then Senator Dames.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and it is good to see you all here in committee. We had a chance to talk as you've been visiting, and I'm wondering if you could share with me and with the committee a little bit of the work that you're doing with your Cultivate series, please.
So the Cultivate series is something we had talked about with the Senator. And the Cultivate series is actually something that Minnesota FFA has been working on. After attending national convention back in November, we decided that we want to take actions towards making sure that our members are ready to be respectful, compassionate, professional, and many other types of characteristics that really create a good leader in our communities. And so with that, we began a video series within FFA that was being shared on YouTube, on social media, and it really explains to our members what they can do to really be as inclusive as possible in our organization so everyone can feel like they belong, like Nicole was talking about. And so each month we produce a series of videos based on one characteristic of a good leader. And for that first month, it was about respect. So we talked about what respect was, and we also offered resources about what respect is and what they could do to really improve that skill. So it's a great opportunity for our members to really dig deeper into what they can do to make this organization even better. And we hope to continue that process over the next several months leading up to our state convention in April.
Very good. Senator Dames.
Mr. Chair.
Sorry, Senator Murphy has a follow-up.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate it. Mr. Chair and to our testifiers. When you talked to me about the Cultivate series earlier today, you had talked about it being something available to more than just members of FFA. Is that accurate?
Anna, Nicole?
Oh, I'll take it over. Chair Westrum, members of the committee. Yes, it is open to everyone. It is on YouTube, so really anyone can take a look at it, grow with us. We have opportunities where students can join us on Zoom, as well as people in our communities and the general public, but it's really trying to just show everyone what is a good way to treat others, and it's something that can be done in FFA, outside of FFA. It's just good characteristics as a human being.
Thank you, and Mr. Chair.
Very good. Thank you,
Senator. Mr. Chair. Just one more thing. I wanted to thank you, and it was important for me to raise that question with you today, in part because what I think you are describing and what you're showing is a form of modeling the behavior and the leadership that you hope to see in others and spreading that in using the tools that you have. And you'd mentioned earlier, I think, that this is a weird time. And I would agree, this is a weird time. And I really appreciate the fact that you're using this platform and your leadership yourselves to alter that, to change that narrative for all of us. So thank you for doing that. Thank you for being here today. And thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Thank you, Senator Murphy. Senator Dames.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank the three testifiers for being here today and your fellow members back there that are back in the audience. We really appreciate what you folks do. But I do appreciate the fact that you're willing to take time out of your careers, being in college and whatever, and spending the time that you are being an FFA, state FFA officer. It's very time consuming, but it is a great opportunity for you to show what your project or what your program is all about. And you folks are great ambassadors for that. We really do appreciate it. We appreciate the fact that you make yourself available at the Capitol and at the House and Senate, so that we can ask you questions and learn more about you folks, but also learn more about what your futures are and things like that. And so thank you for that. And I believe we've got a lot of future leaders in this room with the blue jackets on. So I always like to see the group of blue jackets come. It's always, it's a very impressive program. So thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Senator Dames. I think you got a softball on that one. As a former FFAer, I didn't expect anything less, Senator James. But Senator Anderson, let him have your tough question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate the opportunity to speak to you three and to the rest of the audience that are part of your entourage. Echo what Senator Dames has just said about you and the FFA. I was an FFA member for 4 years in high school and then in going into 2 years of college. So I look at how things have changed since back in, we won't go there, but realize that you have big shoes to fill, and you are, as you get closer to that time of graduation from college and moving on into whatever career you've chosen or however the Lord has led you, I wonder what your experience is as far as the challenges that you face or are going to face in the careers that you might be looking at. I'm guessing you've got something in mind going, as Anna said, from dancing to farming. I used to dance when I was raising hogs a lot of times because they would keep you on your toes, that's for sure. So if you could just explain just a little bit about your challenges. I mean, it seems like it's so far away to that point when you're going to be jumping off into wherever, and that special person might come into your life and take you in a different direction. And so I'm just kind of interested to see and hear where your thoughts are and how you're, someone's already mentioned veterinary, being a veterinary since age two. Will that stay as a veterinarian? I know somebody who's a veterinarian right now and is involved with political on a statewide basis. Her husband is now running for state office. So it's those kind of things that might lead you into a different direction, but still might, you might want to try and keep your feet to the ground and where you want to go. So I'll open it up to all three of you.
Who wants to start? Just briefly about maybe challenges you foresee in your field or your aspirations.
Chair Westrum, members Wyatt. Of the committee, thank you. Well, we know agriculture is an ever-changing industry, one of the biggest, like I was trying to articulate earlier. So issues will be, they're forthcoming, they're here, but the industry is evolving and it's changing. And we have young minds who are in FFA who are developing technology and the industry tenfold to be able to feed double population by 2050 per se. So these challenges are here and they're in the back of our mind and we're always thinking about them. You know, with we have the Agri Science Fair where we have students coming up with a multitude of different agricultural science projects, and that's going to be actually next weekend. We're going to be looking at some of those at the state. So for instance, yes, I do want to be a veterinarian, but you know, that could change because nobody knows the future, right? And within FFA, like Anna was saying about the buffet, even I myself have some other interests within politics, within horticulture, etc. So the opportunities are endless.
Thank you, Wyatt. Wants to go next? Nicole?
I would like to add, Chair Westrom, members of the committee. So one issue that I found in 10th grade, I was a prepared public speaker, and I had a topic about the disconnect between farmers and consumers. And this topic, I didn't realize how close it was to my own life. So since, like I said earlier, I was a dancer, very involved in that, but had a really strong roots in agriculture from my family. And once I got into FFA and agriculture, I really started to learn all of the things. And I danced in the city, so in Eagan. And a lot of my teammates had never stepped foot on a farm. They had no clue how their food got to the table. They just went to the grocery store, picked what was cheapest or what was the healthiest, and didn't have that connection. So what I actually started to do was bring members of my dance team, friends in my community that had no connection to agriculture, out to the farm so they could really see what we did. So they got to ride in the combine with my dad and I. They got to, I started showing pigs, so they got to see how I cared for my pigs and what I was doing with that. But I think since we only have 2% of the population really in agriculture on the farm, that is definitely an issue going forward, is that connection and really sitting at the table with others and communicating our message as farmers. So going into my future, I'm currently studying agricultural communication and marketing and really hope to help bridge that gap in the future. And so FFA is where I found that issue and why I'm so passionate about it going into the future.
Anna?
Chair Westrom, members of the committee, I'm going to tie together both of their perspectives on these issues, and I'm going to share about why agriculture is so important in our schools especially. And so looking at what Wyatt said about how agriculture technology is developing within the younger generation and how we can continue to impact other generations and even the future, it's really amazing to see how our members are taking that foot forward and really making sure that they can be the change in our future. And then Nicole talking about that disconnect between people who maybe live in areas that don't have agriculture around them, so they don't see the processes, or maybe people who just don't have an interest because they've never been introduced. And so when we're looking at the agriculture programs in our schools, we know that some schools have agriculture programs and they're strong, but we also know that there's a long ways to go and that we can get agriculture even more into our schools, not only here in the metro area, but across greater Minnesota, maybe looking at northern Minnesota, looking at rural Minnesota in total, there's space for us to grow. And so it's really important that we're making that effort towards funding agriculture programs for our schools, so that way then FFA can form and there can be chapters and then we can continue on with that work-based learning. And so I think it's really important that when we're looking at future issues, we're realizing that these can also be solved if we're willing to take the foot forward and help get agriculture in our school systems, because that's what led me to where I am today. If I hadn't been in the animal science classes in my classroom, and if I hadn't started my goat and sheep entrepreneurship project within my supervised agricultural experience, I wouldn't know that this is where I want to be today. And so I know that I can take my future into my own hands and know that I'm passionate about what I'm doing and where I'm going. And so that's what FFA has done for me. And I want to make sure amongst my other officers, amongst our members, is that we can make sure we can get the most people within agriculture and prepare those who are maybe not looking at agriculture careers, but just making sure that they're well-informed members of society.
Very good. Senator Goggin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you all for being here today, and thank you for being an FFA. I was a city kid. I was not part of FFA, but I did get the opportunity to work on a dairy farm, so I learned a great deal then. But what my question is about, you talked about the Cultivate series and the leadership, and you mentioned respect. What other topics did you, as FFA members, choose four topics and what you would like to see in characteristics, attributes or traits in a leader. And do they, I guess, lastly, how did you come up with those topics or those traits and characteristics?
Who would like to answer that?
Chair Westrum and members of the committee. When we're talking about the Cultivate series, we have six different segments. And so each of those segments has a specific trait that we're looking at. And so, as I said earlier, is that respect is our first one. And that's one that I was actually able to cover. And so each of us as state officers are actually able to cover one and really go in depth. And so what we do is we talk about what characteristic we want to make sure that our members are really aware of, and then talk to people who display those characteristics. And so we're reaching out to people in agricultural positions and leadership positions and members who actually display that within their school systems. And so respect is one of them. Compassion is our next one. I know professionalism is coming up. We have determination. And then we also have two others that I can't think of off the top of my head right now, but I'd be very willing to share that once committee is over. But those are just a few examples of some of the traits that we're talking about. And I think that some of those traits are some of the most important ones when we're looking at what can we do to really prepare for our future. So that way we can be just the most respectful and knowledgeable members of society as possible.
Very good. Any follow-up, Senator Goggin?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank
you. Any other questions, members?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you. You brought up the word respect, and I remember a song from my earlier teen years called R-E-S-P-E-C-T. Some of these characteristics, you can probably make a kind of a music, make it so that you remember those things as you go forward. Big thing that I see, I had a desire to stay on the farm, wanted to stay on the farm, but when I asked, my brother and I asked to buy the farm, Dad said, go find a real job. And I thought farming was a real job. Anyway, I just want to know what you and how you would encourage someone who, as Nicole already said, wanted to go into dancing, now she's in farming. Will she stay in farming? And how do you encourage people to want to stay on the farm? I mean, those kind of things where people who want to be on the farm, and yet because of the economy and the way things are going and the challenges of the future, we don't know, as you've already mentioned. But what can we do from the state standpoint or from society to keep those who want to be on a farm, who want to continue to that tradition, to be there? What is it that we can do?
Nicole, or who wants to?
Chair Westrum, members of the committee. Well, to finish your song, I think you just really have to find out what it means to me. Look at the agriculturalists who are passionate right now and find out what's keeping them there. You know, we wouldn't be here. I appreciate the laughs. Thank you. We wouldn't be here if it didn't mean a lot to us and if we didn't know that these issues were at the forefront. We work a lot on teacher recruitment and retention because, like I said, this is we're here representing agriculture education and getting students involved. So we're really trying to have teacher retention higher, like Anna said, getting a lot more programs started, getting ag ed in the schools, because we want to start getting passion into the students because they're the future. And in order to make that future strong, that's where we need to look to, is towards the students and the next generation.
Very good. Thank you. Senator Frentz.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you all three very much. Your entire group is one of the most impressive groups of young people that have come through here. And we have about 10 meetings a day, and many of us have been here for many years. So I mean that from the bottom of my heart. Wyatt, you mentioned Aretha Franklin. You had already mentioned Mankato. Your career in politics is already set. And I just want to say, please let us know before you surprise any one of us with an announcement. I think that would be very much appreciated. And I also want to say a special congratulations to your adult leadership. Whatever they're doing, they deserve a lot of thanks. And I just say to all of you, to be continued. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Dittos, Senator Frentz. And I think they might, one of them might live in your district. So. No, I think I hear the passion, and Senator French's point is echoed. You guys are great ambassadors for agriculture. Farming reaches long, far beyond just the field. How does that food get to the grocery shelf? And as long as everybody needs to eat, we're going to always need agriculture. And so that sounds like the message you guys are very passionate about, enthused about, and that's a bright future for us. And so I really appreciated meeting with you earlier today and having you join our committee. I think from the comments, our committee is very appreciative of that as well, and your leadership and your advisors and the leadership they're bringing to agriculture. So encouraging for agriculture. Sometimes agriculture seems to take a backseat, but we do feed the world. And so keep up the great work. Thank you for joining us, and best of luck with your future and careers as you transition into the to the career that you choose. Thanks again. Members, thank you for your indulgence and your comments. Just these are bright spots of our days, and I think it's very relevant to our Ag Committee and what we can do to help promote the topic that we oversee here at the legislature, and keep a strong agriculture economy in our state, starting with farmers and ending at the kitchen table. Next, members, we've got a few bills to do. And, you know, I was going to say we've got a pretty full crowd today, and I think we'll just attribute that to the FFA state officers that were here. They drew a pretty big crowd, so maybe the biggest crowd of our committee so far this session. So good to see a big crowd back, and for all of you that join us live, we're glad to have that opportunity here at the Senate and our committee. So with that, we'll call up Senator Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Senate, Chair.
Senate File 3585, the chair will move Senate File 3585 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Civil Law Committee. Senator Matthews, tell us about your bill, and then there's a couple testifiers, and we have an A3 amendment, or A1 amendment. Tell us about your bill and then the amendment briefly, Senator Matthews.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And first off, boy, what a tough act to follow. I appreciate that assignment, but I'll do my best here. Senate File 3585, real briefly, and I'll let our testifiers dig into it more, is a Department of Agriculture identified an issue that we want to make sure does not become a problem, and that's to ensure that any mental health data with farmers that reach out and look for mental health help through the Minnesota Farm and Rural Helpline, to make sure that that data will be classified as private data and is not subject to a public data request or a records request or anything like that. So we believe that statute now currently will have it correctly classified, but my information I've gathered is that there is a questionable interpretation that one could make an argument that the data could be accessible. So the goal of this bill is to make sure that this data would stay private, that there's no question for any alternative interpretation for it, and make sure that this can be a safe resource that farmers can utilize if they decide to seek mental health resources. So with that, Mr. Chair, I could either do the amendment first or go to the testifiers, whichever your preference would be.
Senator Matthews, maybe just briefly touch on the amendment. Why don't we move it and get it into the order you wanted as the author, and the chair will move the A3 amendment. Tell us briefly about the amendment change. It's technical.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Or Senate Counsel can.
Yes, it is basically to align with the way that the bill is sitting in the House right now after they have passed it through their committee, and I'd be happy to have counsel help explain the specifics that are in it, if possible.
Ms. Painter, do you want to just briefly explain the amendment to the members?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. There's just a small addition, adding pass-through recipients to the text of the bill, and also Another addition is adding an effective date, so it's effective immediately following enactment.
Very good. Members, any questions on the A1 amendment? Having none, all those in favor of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Senator Matthews, to the bill as amended, your first testifier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe Ms. Meg Moynihan, who I believe is virtual, is the first testifier from the Department of Ag. And then we have Chris McNulty, the general counsel from Ag, also available for any questions.
Okay. Meg Moynihan, are you with us?
Yes, Senator, I am with you here in down in Le Sueur County on a dairy farm, and I would like to thank you and the rest of the senators on the committee, and especially Senator Matthews for hearing this bill today.
Meg, if you could just identify yourself for our record, that'd be great. Thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Yes, Senator Westrom. For the record, my name is Meg Moynihan. I serve as Senior Advisor on Policy and on Strategy and Innovation for the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I have been serving at the department for 20 years, and since about 2017, I have really focused my work on what I think of as the human experience of agriculture, some of the things that Senator Anderson was just getting at, and how farmers are experiencing their lives and the satisfaction of their lives, and especially developing efforts and initiatives that support farmers in stress. We know there's a great deal of stress from many different angles that farmers cope with on a daily, weekly, monthly, and seasonal basis. We fund at the department, either directly or via pass-through, several services that support farmers in stress. And those would be, as mentioned in the bill, our Minnesota Farm and Rural Helpline, which is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week by phone, text, and email. And also direct farmer mental health counseling by two practitioners, Ted Matthews and Monica McConkie, and that's passed through funding from the legislature. Mental health is still an extremely sensitive topic, and it is loaded with stigma. And our concern is being able to both assure and ensure privacy for farmers, ranchers, and others in agriculture who are seeking help for their concerns. So we try very hard, and our contractors and pass-through people try very hard to manage this information and not to collect any more personal information than is necessary. But sometimes we have to collect that, and sometimes it is offered to us, and it becomes a record. So although we protect this information with care, we really want to be able to explicitly protect the identity of users as non-public, just in case we or our contractors or the pass-through entities ever receive a public information request for that information. I am joined, as Senator Matthews mentioned, by Chris McNulty. He's deputy counsel for us at the Department of Agriculture, and he is our data practices wizard, so he is available to answer technical questions that you might have about the bill. And I see that Deputy Commissioner Andrea Vobel is also with us today, and if you have any questions at a policy level that you'd like the commissioner's office to address, she would be able to do that as well. And I'm happy to stand for questions, Senator. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Moynihan. What a opportunity to join us from the dairy farm here in the Agriculture Committee. So just interesting what technology has allowed us to do, and you came through very well. Senator Matthews, did you indicate Chris wants to testify as well, or just here for questions?
Mr. Chair, my understanding is he's here for questions.
Okay. Very good. Members, are questions to the bill? And I'm going to start off. Chris, maybe you can help. Line 1.1 talks about connected to agriculture. I've got a question about how do they decipher or decide what information would be protected and what wouldn't be. If you could expand that to us, and I am wondering if there's maybe a little more clarification that needs to be done on that portion of the bill, because I think the intention is here to make sure people aren't concerned about any discussions they're having with maybe a mental health issue going on and their point of life becomes public. But Chris, if you could just maybe address that issue, or Senator Matthews, if you want to as well, but it's a point I'd like to make sure we flush out as good as we can.
Thank you, Chair Westrum. That language is drafted initially, I believe, to give clarification about the purpose of this law. That being said, we are open to removing it, just to clarify that anyone calling for mental or behavioral health issues, their identity would be protected. It would not be limited to farmers or members of the agricultural industry.
And so my understanding and your understanding is the reason is we want to protect the calls that come into this ag hotline primarily. That's the data we're ultimately getting the person and the people that are potentially subject to this questionable area of how to protect the data. Would it make sense to just open it up to any calls coming in through this hotline are treated as this type of data, or any thoughts you'd have? And I don't have an amendment for today, but I'm just raising the issue as maybe it moves forward. We should maybe try to make sure it covers those calls and not necessarily the content. They might be engaged in agriculture, but a lot of people work off the farm nowadays too. It might be situations with their children, with their spouse, with their parents, with neighbors. Even though they're involved in agriculture, it might be other issues that are part of the crisis or the issue going on. Do you understand my point? And what do you think, Chris, if you could just give us a response?
Thank you, Chair Westrum. Yes, I agree. The purpose of this, I believe the intent was in drafting this law, was to make it expansive such that anyone calling for our services, their identity would be protected.
Other questions, members? Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it seems like we could strike connected to farming or agriculture and affect the goal that you're describing, just as a way of advice. I do want to thank you for bringing this, Senator Matthews. I really look forward to the day in Minnesota when we don't think about mental health as a condition attached with stigma. But even if it were not, it is right that someone who seeks help should not have their data disclosed. And it's a matter of healthcare and medical practice. And I think this is an important clarification. So I thank you for bringing it.
Senator Murphy, I missed the end of your comment. I was talking to staff. Did you have a question or?
No, it was really a brilliant comment, Mr. Chair, but oh. I'll leave it at that.
That's why, Senator Murphy, thank you. And maybe Senator Matthews, Senator Murphy's idea, was just talking to staff about that, and Mr. McNulty, if we drop that language, do you think that would have any unintended consequences? Or I'm thinking it might improve exactly what we're trying to do here, but Senator Matthews?
So, Mr. Chair, and maybe Council can help clarify, I believe that you're considering striking the words connected to farming or agriculture, and the sentence would then read, any individual who seeks assistance with a mental or behavioral health issue through the helpline are private or non-public. Is that correct, Mr. Chair?
Senator Matthews, that would be correct, and that, as I've looked at it with staff up here, I think that's exactly what we're trying to do.
Chair, I would have no objection to that and would be happy to hear MDA's comments to it as well.
Mr. McNulty, with MDA Council. Any thoughts?
Thank you, Chair. I do not believe we would have any objections to that.
Okay. And with that, I'll have our Senate counsel just say the oral amendment. Members, if you have any questions, then we can talk about it. Otherwise, the chair would move that amendment. Ms. Painter, can you just say what words we would describe, we would sure. be deleting?
On line 1.11, delete connected to farming or agriculture. And also, I'd recommend amending the title accordingly, the title of the bill.
Very good. The chair would move that oral amendment. Members, any questions? I think it's pretty clear. No further questions. All those in favor of that oral amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. To the bill as amended, Senator Matthews. Members, any other questions? Senator Anderson.
Could Ms. Painter clarify the last statement that she made? Was that regarding the title of the bill? And where about what line we were talking about?
Ms. Painter?
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Anderson. So on line 1.2 to 1.3, you'd be deleting the words connected to farming or agriculture.
Very good. Thank you.
Other questions, members? No further discussion. Senator Matthews, any final comments? Otherwise, I think we're ready to move to a vote.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'll be brief. I appreciate the committee's consideration. I think this is a common sense measure that we should take to ensure this information stays private, and appreciate the committee's and your support, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Senator Matthews, to the motion, members, the passage of 3585. Chair renews his motion to pass Senate File 3585 and re-refer it to the Civil Law Committee as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Very good. Thank you, Senator Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson. Senate File 3476, Senator Dames, you want to move this bill? And motion is to pass Senate File 3476, and be referred to the Civil Law Committee. Senator Johnson, welcome to our committee. Welcome back.
Thank you very much.
And Senator Dames, you want to make that motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I move that Senate File 3476 be heard in the committee and passed out and moved to civil law.
Very good. Senator Johnson, to that motion, tell us about your bill, and you've got some testifiers. So welcome, and tell us about your bill, and then there's an amendment, an A3 amendment.
That's well. Correct, Mr.
Okay.
Chair. Do you want to move the A3 amendment to get the bill in order before, or would you like to do that after?
Why don't you briefly tell us what the amendment would do, and then we'll move that to get it in the bill, the order the author would like the bill.
All right. So the amendment, the A3 amendment, does three things. It defines a little bit differently the line extension agreement. It also talks about the minimum standards in Section 2. Of that's the minimum standards, right? Section 2. Okay, the minimum standards of the download and upload speeds on that, and then really the last part of that 1.2 to 1.25 is just some technical amendments within that.
Members, questions to the A3 amendment? Senator Anderson moves the A3 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Senator Johnson, to your bill as amended.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. This is a bill that addresses a need that many of us have heard for years and years and years. This is one step closer to us maybe not hearing about broadband in the future and the needs across the state. this is the, we've done a good job. We've had the Minnesota model for many years here in Minnesota that's done an excellent job of getting broadband out into most of Minnesota. We still have a significant number of families that are really in need of those services. And you think about what this pandemic has brought about in the last 2 years, and we see the needs for that internet access across rural Minnesota, but also even within our larger communities. There's still pockets of need within that as well too. This is a significant tool. Broadband is a significant tool for developing not only the ability for families to move out there, but also businesses and other infrastructure in rural Minnesota that you know, we desperately need to keep rural Minnesota and our communities, larger communities, viable. So with that, I will let Ms. Boroff talk a little bit about 3476, some of the details behind it, and what the new grant program would do for our communities.
Very good. Ms. Boroff, welcome to our committee. State your name for the record and tell us about the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Anna Boroff, and I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Cable Association, and my members are proud broadband providers across Minnesota. Senate File 3476 helps ensure that we don't leave Minnesotans behind when it comes to having a strong broadband connection. So we thank Senator Johnson for carrying this bill, and we appreciate many of you for being co-authors. So your willingness to think sort of outside of the box to make sure that we fill the remaining connection gaps in our state is really appreciated. Minnesota is about to unleash an unprecedented amount of money for broadband deployment, which is very exciting. But the efficient distribution of this massive influx of funding in addition to our own private capital is going to bring some major challenges. So Senate File 3476 will help ensure that this substantial inflow of federal funding brings broadband service to customers as quickly as possible. So the first section of the bill is what we're calling a line extension program. So right now, broadband funding programs are not scaled small enough to get grant support to one, two, or maybe even three customers. So without this bill, we will continue to leave these customers, these residents and businesses behind. So I'm sure you've run across the situation because I know many of you have talked to me about that. Your constituent looks at a broadband map, and because they're so close to infrastructure, it shows them as served sometimes, even when they are not. So unless we provide the Office of Broadband with a tool to identify and reach these households, these locations will continue to wait for service or somehow be forced to come up with the funds to pay a provider to reach them. So the bill creates a tool for homes and businesses who lack broadband to providers and would assist in covering the expense of extending the service to these hard to reach locations. So for example, either yourselves or your constituents can relate to the frustration of having a fiber connection really close, but simply doesn't extend far enough to reach everyone, or others have a long driveway and the infrastructure just doesn't, you know, extend from that driveway to the residents or the business. So this new program would provide the Office of Broadband a tool and complement existing programs. So it's designed to close those remaining gaps. So our goal when we drafted this was to keep it simple and flexible. We recognize that a barrier right now to providers and to the state is we're not equipped to go through a time-consuming and prescriptive process for one or two addresses. So Minnesota's excellent border-to-border program or available federal grants are just not scaled small enough to reach these locations. So this is how the program would work. The Office of Broadband would create a portal on their website to allow any person to report that broadband is not available at their residence or business. The office would then ensure these locations does not have service, and then we would do a reverse auction on those addresses to allow providers to bid on the cost of extending service. So the provider's bid would include the requested state subsidy. The Office of Broadband would select the lowest bid provided as a cost-effective use of state resources. There's also a maximum project cost of $25,000 or a maximum amount from the state for $25,000. And all sorts of providers would be allowed to bid. So, you know, it would not just be a cable company, it could be a telephone provider, you know, a co-op, whoever. So the concept we stole, we took it from a successful program in Indiana that has and continues to be modeled in other states. The second portion of the bill addresses broadband easements. So in 2021, legislation passed allowing electric co-ops who hold an existing private easement for electric service to use those same easements for broadband service. Other broadband providers do not have that same ability, which is the ability to use their existing easements they hold for broadband service. So this bill would give all broadband providers the same easement rights. This change also helps with a level playing field for all providers as we try to deploy, and it helps the state avoid preemption issues created by the 2021 law. So federal law makes it clear that state provisions related to advancing broadband have to be competitively neutral. So we think this is a creative approach to addressing our shared goal of bringing broadband across the state. And we really appreciate our partnership with the legislature and with the Office of Broadband. And we're having conversations with other groups to socialize and advance the goals of this bill. And the amendment adopted earlier is a reflection of some of those conversations. So we look forward to working with you all to hopefully pass this legislation to help every household get a strong broadband connection. And I appreciate the opportunity to testify today, and I'm happy to answer any questions. And I also have our legal counsel as well, who helped draft the bill to answer questions as well. So thank you.
So, Ms. Boroff, is your legal counsel planning to testify or just here for questions?
Mr. Chair, members, he's just here to answer questions okay. that I can't answer.
So thank you, Ms. Boroff. Members, any questions? We'll come back to them. Otherwise, I'd like to get through the three testifiers. Mr. Apitz, why don't you come up and then, you're online, Mr. Apitz. You can try to cover it in a couple, 2-3 minutes would be helpful to keep moving through the agenda, but welcome to our committee. Identify yourself, Mr. Apitz, and go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Apitz. I am with the Minnesota Regional Railroads Association, which is the trade association for the 20 railroads that operate here in Minnesota. And I'm here basically both with a confession and an apology. The confession is that I am getting a little older, and it's probably time for me to get off the playing field because I missed this bill last year. And I certainly appreciate the chance to come and explain some of the concerns of our industry this time around, because the bill that was passed last year and this one raised some issues for us that I think we can work out if we can just spend some time on this. There is currently, I just want to note that there is currently a statute, Minnesota Statutes 237.045, which deal with utility activity on railroad right-of-way. It lays out a process and the requirements that are involved when you place or use railroad right-of-way for utility purposes. The utilities understand it, the railroads understand it. We've had it in place now for about 5 or 6 years, and we spent a lot of hours crafting it and trying to put it together. I think Senator Dames will remember this one as well. We spent a lot of hours late at night trying to work on a few amendments to this. But let me explain why it's important to give consideration to 237.045, and let me paint a real quick picture. Railroads involve the use of a lot of heavy machinery moving at a whole variety of different speeds, carrying thousands of tons of freight, which include things like foodstuffs, car parts, chemicals, anhydrous ammonia, sulfuric acid, chlorine, propane, ethanol, a whole load of other stuff. And they ride on ribbons of steel, which are laid on ties, which are then laid on top of a specifically engineered roadbed. That roadbed is designed to deal with the weight and the elements that affect the operations of the railroad. So I think you can understand, given that situation, why maintaining that roadbed and maintaining those tracks is so important. It's important to us so that we can maintain our operations, but also for the safety of those operations, the safety of the public, and the safety of railroad employees as well. Utility crossings basically undermine those roadbeds. And by that I mean literally undermine, go underneath, they mine underneath and lay in the utilities that are needed. But also if it's not done right, if it's not done properly, can actually undermine the stability and the integrity of those operations. If you want to see how these things can go wrong when you're digging underneath railroad tracks, just go talk to the Met Council about what's going on with the Southwest Light Rail right now. You'll get a pretty good idea quite quickly. But let me just say, Minnesota Statute 237.045 has addresses the several issues that are involved with this sort of situation when railroads and utilities, when a utility needs to cross a railroad tracks. We have notice and permit requirements. We have engineering standards that are federal engineering standards that must be met to ensure the integrity of those tracks. There's insurance requirements designed to protect the public, designed to protect railroad employees, designed to protect the utilities. There's safety requirements, like a flagger. There are flaggers needed when this work is done along railroad tracks, and there's even a dispute resolution process if we can't agree on how best to go about this. The railroads know about this particular statute. We do, and we work together to put it together, and it works generally speaking. The bill in front of you, 3476, as well as the statute that was passed last year, 308A, I think it's 201, provides exception for local governments that have a permitting process in place for when utilities need to lay in new access across their across streets, etc. And just looking at that, and given the concerns that we're expressing here, coming to you and saying if we could find a way to cast an exception that uses 237 when you deal with railroad property, that would help, I think, the public, the utilities, and ourselves as well. We've discussed these concerns very briefly last night, I think it was, or the day before, with the chair and with the proponents of the bill. And as we go forward, I think we can find an agreement on this and work it out. I just wanted to make sure, though, that before I left the field, I didn't miss the opportunity to raise these concerns, so we have a chance to talk about them going forward with the bill. So thank you, Mr. Chairman. I can certainly stand for any questions anybody might have. Kind of you to have me here today.
Thank you, Mr. Apitz. There's a Sarah Erickson, Mr. Apitz. Sarah, are you here or are you online? And I don't know if she was intending to testify also or
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Apitz.
Mr. Chairman, both Sarah and I were so excited that both of us put our names in, and I just handled the testimony. So we're in good shape. Thank you very much.
Okay, very good. Just wanted to check. Members, I guess that is concludes the testifiers. Is there anybody else here in the audience that wants to testify for or against this bill? Questions, Member Senator Dames, and then Senator Anderson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Borhoff, when we talked yesterday, I was under the understanding that there was peace in the valley. And it appears that there's not peace in the valley with the railroads. And I served on the Railroad Commission back in the day, and this is a big issue. And so any ideas of how you think we should resolve this? Is this a bill that needs to be laid over until that issue gets resolved? Do you want to try to, do you agree to do something before the next committee to get it resolved? What's your thoughts on how we're going to handle this? Because this is an issue when you get involved with the railroads and you start undermining, you do those federal regulations and stuff have to be followed. When they're not, there are issues. So this was overlooked last year, obviously, but it might be the time to correct that for both bills so that we don't have issues with that. Thoughts on that?
Ms. Borhoff?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dames, I just heard about this issue last night, so this is a new one. In reminding folks that this bill did pass for electric co-ops last year, so I sympathize with Mr. Apitz that they missed this last year. Those issues should have been raised last year when this bill passed. That being said, and I do want to say this language is exactly what the co-ops passed last year. It's extending it to all broadband fighters. I hear what you're saying, Senator Dames, and that being said, I'm happy to keep talking to the railroads and figure out what to do next.
So, Senator Mr. Dames. Chair, follow up. So you say you're happy to talk with them. Are you saying that you work to get something worked out by the time it goes to the next committee?
Ms. Borhoff.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dames, yes, I will work with the railroads to figure out what we can do there. Is that okay? Work for the author.
Thank you.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To Mr. Apitz, what is broadband, how is broadband handled now in regards to railroads as we're putting broadband throughout the state of Minnesota from your vantage point?
Mr. Apitz.
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, essentially the procedures that are laid in place in 237.045 are what is used, and you can go take a peek at that, is what is used for the permit, for the access, and for the other requirements that are in place for placing any sort of utility, broadband or otherwise, across, along, or underneath railroad right-of-way. And I could detail it if you wish, but that's in place, and that's the one we've been using. I think we put it in place in 16, if I'm not mistaken.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you. So, Mr. Abbott, right now you're not having any difficulty with the issue of installing broadband throughout the state with the, railroads. Am I correct in saying that? But you're concerned about the future as far as these line extensions and easements and things like that? Mr. Abbott?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, I think that's a very fair statement. I don't think we run into many problems at all. What this does with the statute or the bill in front of you and the statute passed last year does, from our perspective, is basically say wherever there's an easement in place, all you have to do is give notice and go forward and put in the broadband. And there's a bunch of safety concerns, both from the perspective of the railroad's operations as well as from the public safety that come to mind when this comes about. So that's why that statute's there. That's why we've come to learn how to use it. I think the utilities know how to use it. That's we'd like to use that statute for this purpose going forward. No, we don't want to stop broadband. Broadband's important. We rely on broadband as everybody does. We want to get that done. We just want to do it safely and in a way that we all understand how to do it.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Abbott, do you believe that you can work with Ms. Boroff and her agents to get the right language in place to get this thing in place before, say, civil law next week or next 2 weeks?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, Ms. Boroff is very competent and capable, as is her counsel, and I've got some ideas that we just didn't get pulled together yet today that I think we can work out by the time we get to civil law.
Senator Anderson, Mr. Mendoza, I maybe have a question for you. The issue raised by the railroads, and Mr. Appitz, maybe let me start with you. If it's wire easements that you already that are already in existence, is that different than if it's wireless towers erected, Mr. Appitz? And I guess my question to Mr. Mendoza is, what's their intention? Is it the wire easements? Because I think that was the original intention of the bill that passed last year. But Mr. Appitz and then Mr. Mendoza, if you can respond to the question.
Mr. Chairman, the easements that are in place underneath railroad tracks or along railroad right-of-way are each written specifically to that sort of particular crossing. So a gas line easement would be different from a fiber optic easement is different from various different kinds of utilities that run underneath a railroad track. So the answer to the question is, yeah, they're different. You're gonna be dealing basically with wire easements, as I understand in this particular instance. So casting them may be pretty much similar, but different types of utilities have different types of easements crafted for them.
Mr. Mendoza, similar question, the intention of the language and the easements and what it would impact. If you could address that, is it?
Yep, Mr. Chair, Tony Mendoza, outside legal counsel to the Minnesota Cable Communications Association. And as Ms. Boroff pointed out, we just learned about this issue last night. This bill was thoroughly vetted last year, and we do believe this issue should have been raised last year. I'm happy to have a conversation with counsel for the Railroad Association about their objection, but at first blush and just hearing about their objection in substance for the first time sitting here today, I question what impact this bill would have on the railroad's crossings. What the bill language does and what the co-op language did last year was
to allow facilities that are already crossing or on the premises to be used for a different purpose. So there's really no additional construction or work that really would be done. It's just basically saying if you have an easement for providing for a fiber optic line that's already providing phone or video service, that you can use that same easement to provide broadband services. But maybe there's a nuance here that I'm missing, and I'm happy to have a conversation with the railroads about it. But in terms of the impact or the safety impact that this bill might have on railroads, I'm missing it right now. But again, happy to talk more about that with the railroads later. I will say one other thing. Section 237.045, I'm actually very familiar with that. It has not been a smooth process with the railroads in obtaining crossing rights. In fact, the Public Utilities Commission just opened a new docket based in part on their frustration with the railroads in granting these permits to cross them, which is actually a live docket right now in front of the commission. They're taking comments that are due on the 21st of March. So if, you know, we're willing to work with the railroads, but to the extent that this is some other way to get a hook on utilities in general to extort more conditions or more money for crossings, you know, we're going to have a big problem with that. So I would love to sit down and hear exactly what the railroads are thinking about this. I don't see the safety impact of this bill just at first blush hearing the railroads' objections. And it hopefully is not another way for the railroads to take another pound of flesh out of utility companies trying to you know build out broadband services to Minnesota.
Mr. Chairman, could I
go ahead, Mr. Appitz?
If I might, I just have to respond to that. That, Mr. Chairman, that's not the intent here. When people come onto railroad property is inherently dangerous. And people are going to be coming onto railroad property to put these facilities in place, whether it's a piece of line, a piece of wire, whatever it might be. They'll be coming onto railroad property with active, in many cases, active trains running. We're not going to be able to take an extra pound of flesh out of anybody or anything else. That's all been resolved long ago in 237.045. What we want to do is make sure that when people come onto railroad property that they're safe and they follow the engineering standards and the safety standards that we have in place. We can work this out, Mr. Chairman. We'll be able to work this through.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson.
I think this is something maybe we should work out before we get back out in front of the next hearing, wherever that might be. But clearly there's an opportunity here to do some work on the bill, and I think we could have a very good, healthy conversation with the railroads on this. We just want to get broadband out in a safe way to our communities. So,
and Mr. Like. Thank you, Senator Johnson. Mr. Mendoza, to the question, if you could, I guess, clarify or talk about any expansion of these easements or use thereof, what your intention is and what you foresee. My understanding is it would be wires that are already, there's already existing easements for, but some have brought up concerns that it would open up the opportunity for 5G or other types of wireless towers. Is that your plan or intention? And how do you see that fitting into this or not an issue?
Mr. Chair, for the most part, I think the services that are being provided are provided over wire and fiber. It is a competitively neutral bill. And so I think to the extent that an existing easement could be used for something like a 5G facility, you know, I think we'd have to look at that. I think probably right now it would allow that because it is competitively neutral in terms of the technology. The goal here again is to allow any provider to use those existing easements for facilities that are already in place to provide an additional service. I think practically speaking, whether there are easements that exist out there today that that a 5G provider would be able to essentially, that a 5G provider already has, I'm not sure that those actually exist. But again, if there's a stakeholder out there that is you know, wanting to have a conversation with us about it. We haven't heard about it from anybody yet in terms of concerns about, you know, the use of this stat, this bill for 5G services. But if there is a concern out there about it, we're certainly happy to talk to those stakeholders as well.
So, and maybe last question on that. So is there some concern, and Mr. Appetz, you can respond after Mr. Mendoza, but would one of the concerns be a 5G tower being erected different than a current easement may already have contemplated as far as wire or structure to support that existing wire? And is there a difference? And I guess to the railroad's point, is that a concern that they would have as well? But Mr. Mendoza, and then Mr. Appetz, and then Senator Goggin has a question.
Mr. Chair, I wasn't aware that the 5G issue was a railroad concern until you just spoke. So again, I think we will want to sit down with the railroads and hear or allow them to air all of their concerns. As Senator Johnson just indicated, we're certainly willing to do that. But we're kind of hearing these for the first time as we sit down at the hearing table before you today. So I think maybe the best course would be to get together with the railroads, hear what their concerns are, and then go from there.
Very good. Senator Goggin, or Mr. Appetz first, and then Senator Goggin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's a new issue to me, too. I'm not thinking about 5G, as a matter of fact, and we'd certainly be happy to have that sort of discussion if it arises. It would be a different kind of use of the property. And I guess if you're putting up a tower as opposed to putting up some line, you'd want to make sure the engineering standards were in place to make sure that was safe and done properly. That's not the particular issue that we're raising here. And I apologize again that we didn't raise this last year. That's my fault, and I'll take credit for that, and maybe time for me to leave the field. But in either case, thank you for the opportunity just to talk about this. I think we can work this out. This isn't as complicated as it's maybe seeming to appear right now.
Senator Goggin, then Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Appetz, if you could give us a brief description of what a typical track bed and easement is in size and dimension, so that we have an idea of, you know, for the safety aspect of it is where I'm heading with this, is because, you know, you got people walking along the tracks and the trail, and I'm just trying to get an idea of how close a proximity someone could be in relation to the trains as they're going by.
Okay. Typically the right-of-way, Senator Goggin, the typical railroad right-of-way is 50 feet on either side of center. So you're talking essentially about a 100-foot wide path that is the railroad right-of-way. The tracks are 4 foot, 6.5 inches. And then you've got the ties on which the tracks lie. And then you've got the ballast that's underneath that. And the ballast consists of rough rock, gravel, et cetera, that's built up to a certain set of engineering standards. So in answer to your original question, that's what it looks like. That's how it's put in place, and that's how it's maintained. The size is about 100 foot, 50 feet off of center on either side.
Senator Goggin. Mr. Chair. Thank you. So right now with the other utilities having access to the easements and have done work within those easements, are they doing like directional bore underneath the tracks themselves, or are they going along this or along parallel with the track and the easement, or combination of both?
Mr. Appetz.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Goggin, it's a combination of both. The typical easement or the typical crossing goes underneath the tracks lower than 4 feet down. So you need to go down 4 feet, you go underneath the track, and that basically preserves the integrity of that ballast and that other material above it. But there is provision in 237.04 for the distance that a utility can run alongside or longitudinally, if you will, along a railroad track. It's for no more than a mile, basically, before it crosses over.
And Mr. Chair, if I could, just two more questions.
Go ahead, Senator Goggin.
Oh, thank you. So last question for you, Mr. Appetz. The safety training is kind of where I'm heading with this one. I know a lot of companies have site-specific or company-specific training programs and requirements for contractors that come on their property or on their easements and that. Would that be something you would like to work out with the broadband folks to ensure that people who do gain, if and when we get this all worked out, that they're going to be able to do their work safely and meet all the requirements necessary to get this completed without any issues.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Goggin, the basic answer to that is yes. Certainly, they have their own training and safety procedures that they follow. When you're dealing with a railroad, though, there are issues of, especially if it's an active line, of trains coming down the track. In instances where it is an active line, we'll often require a flagger to be positioned so that the train is aware and that the utility workers are aware of the intersection of those activities going on. We don't want anybody on the tracks when the trains go by is the short of it. And when you punch a hole underneath the railroad track, you want it to be good and stable and good for the utility and good for us. I mean, we don't want the track to cave in on the utility. That produces an effect that they don't want and that we don't want.
Last Senator question, Goggin. Mr. Chair. This question is for the broadband folks. What size cable bundles are you typically going to be looking at installing in these easements and right-of-ways?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson.
I think before, that's a good question, Senator Goggin, but I think we're going maybe down the wrong path with this questioning as well. What last year's co-op bill did was allowed existing equipment that's currently underneath there that's gone through all the processes of that easement and allowing the co-ops to use that infrastructure that's already in the ground to be used for slightly different purposes. So now we're looking at fiber optics that are currently underneath the tracks that can now deliver broadband as well in addition to the other services it provides. So it's not necessarily we're punching holes underneath tracks anymore, but just allowing a larger spectrum of that equipment, those lines underneath to be used for this purpose. If there does need to be an opportunity to put something new underneath the track, we still have to follow that 237 statutory language with all the safety requirements and engineering and everything that goes with that and go through that whole process that whether it's cumbersome or not, that's not an issue today, but that's where the safety comes in for that. So I just wanted to be clear as we're working through this, that this doesn't have the same safety impact that might be going through our heads at the moment. So do you still want an answer?
No,
for
Mr.
The
Chair, this,
Senator Goggin.
No, I think this is something we need to take offline and discuss in more detail outside of committee. I'm done with my questioning. Thank you.
Very good. And Mr. Mendoza, to that point, are these easements potentially written so narrow that they would say fiber optic, but they prescribe what can be transmitted? The fiber optic, I think to your comment earlier or not, just so we get a better understanding, then Senator Murphy, and then members, we got to move along or hold this over. So if you could answer that, Mr. Mendoza, and then Senator Murphy has a question.
Yes, Mr. Chair, that is the case sometimes where, you know, an easement could have been granted in the 1970s when a cable system was just providing video and it does state the purpose to provide video service. And so just like the co-ops did last year, they have easements that allow them to provide electric service. They wanted to update those easements with, as Senator Johnson just said, existing facilities in the ground already just to use it for a different purpose. And that's really what this bill and what the co-op bill did last year. And as Senator Johnson also pointed out, any safety concerns we think would be already addressed in Section 237.045, where every utility has to go through this process with railroads when they're actually constructing a facility, and it sets forth all the safety procedures, et cetera. So again, not quite seeing the need for amending this bill, but we're happy to have the conversation offline.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I was wondering, Ms. Boroff, if you could take us to the start of this again and remind us what the purpose of this proposal is and what's at stake for Minnesotans if we're not able to get it done.
Chair Westrum, Senator Murphy, thank you. Thank you for the question. The purpose of this bill is for us to get broadband to as many Minnesotans as possible and not leave anyone behind. And so I was most excited about the line extension program, which we haven't discussed very much, but we're really excited about it. We think it's a way to complement the work that we're doing already and to make sure that as this federal money comes in and we get these larger swaths of the state covered, that we're not leaving anyone behind. And also in that process, to make sure the processes we have in place to deploy that broadband are as efficient as possible. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Baroff and Mr. Chair.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Senator Johnson. I am grateful that you are gonna take this and work with the various parties and get this to a place where we can move it forward. I heard you loud and clear on that, and it's important. So thank you for that. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Senator Frentz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Johnson. Thanks, testifiers. I mean, I hear safety, I hear insurance, and I hear a desire to have peace in the valley, and I'm satisfied with what we've been talking about here, that that's what it's going to take. As a former member of the committee, Senator Johnson, you know how important it is to provide rural broadband to every Minnesotan. But I think once safety's raised and once there's a question about whether safety is an issue, I encourage it to get worked out and look forward to passing it once it's all worked out. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Members, any other questions? At this point, the plan, chair's intention would be to pass this on to the Civil Law Committee. I think we've raised some important issues or questions that the parties can work on. We always have the opportunity to ask for the bill back if we want. I'm not suggesting that's what we would do, but I know Chair Matthews will also be interested in working with Senator Johnson and the parties to look at this. So at this point, with no further discussion, Senator Johnson, final comment, and then we'll take a vote.
Certainly. Thank you for that opportunity, and thank you, committee, for your patience today as we work through some of these last-minute items that are coming up. I'd also like to thank the co-authors, Senator Rosen, Frentz, Howell and Westrum, for your help in getting this across the finish line, because I know you've all been integral in getting this moved forward. So appreciate that opportunity. And with that, Mr. Chair, I turn back to you.
Senator Dames would renew his motion to pass Senate File 3476 as amended and re-refer it to the Civil Law Committee. Members, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion does prevail. Thank you, Senator Johnson. The members, we have a drought relief bill. We are running short of time. My intention would be, we have Commissioner Peterson here for some brief comments. A couple farmers, I would like to get those testifiers out, and this will carry over to Monday's agenda, but let's get started for a little while to at least tee up this important issue. So I'm gonna turn the gavel over to Senator Dames, or Goggin, okay.
Senator Westrum, thank you for bringing this Senate File 3479 to the committee here today. With that, I would like to have Senator Dornink move Senate File 3479 to be heard at the table here.
So moved.
Senator Westrum, to your bill.
Mr. Chair, members, this is a proposal. This bill deals with a drought relief package for our farmers dealing with the damages and the lack of rain in spots across Minnesota last summer and fall, primarily last summer with the pastures not getting the rain or timely rains to grow the alfalfa fields and forage crops, silage, in some cases not getting the timely rains and the need for some additional aid to help supplement some of those extra expenses that our farmers are going through in the targeted areas. So in the interest of time, Mr. Chair, I'd just like to let Commissioner Peterson tee up the issue as we continue to discuss it and let some of the testifiers that are farmers and that have come in for this testify, and then we can continue discussion on this on Monday.
Thank you, Senator Westrom. So Commissioner Peterson, please state your name for the record and give us your testimony. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'll be brief, as knowing time is short. Tom Peterson, Commissioner of Agriculture, Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I want to thank Senator Westrom for bringing the bill forward, 3479. This reflects the original version or language that the department had worked on and has had for quite a while, or that the general concept is $5 million for grants, $5 million for loans for our Rural Finance Authority and our disaster recovery loan that we have. That's a revolving loan account, and we think now would be a good time to replenish that. We are not out of funds in that account, but we're running somewhat low as we've seen interest in farmers using that account to purchase feed right now. It's a zero interest loan with a little bit of longer payback. And so encourage you to look at that. You know, as Senator Westrom said, just real quick, if you went back to late August, right before the state fair, 80% of Minnesota was in a severe drought, 50% of Minnesota was in extreme drought, and 10% of Minnesota was in an exceptional drought. Luckily, we got some timely rains, but through the summer, that really brought our corn and wheat, not as much our wheat, but our corn and soybean crop back nice. But the fact of the matter is those farmers lost throughout the state. Their first cutting of hay may have been a half. They've lost their second, third cutting of hay. And that resulted in just shorter hay stocks. They had to feed hay that they had stored for the winter. And that reflected in our end of the year hay report in Minnesota that showed our hay stocks were down 35%. From last year the first of the year, and our hay stocks were the third lowest since 1950, or for what we have on. And I see that reflected in auction sales that I go to and discussions that we have with farmers. We've been losing 20 dairy farms a month since this drought started in July. We're down to almost 2,000 dairy farms in our state. And the drought isn't the only reason for that, but a lot of the farmers would just say they're simply out of feed and cannot afford $300 a ton feed. And so what we really think in talking with the groups, this is kind of something that we put together in talking with different groups, that this would be the best way to do it. We did a dairy relief program a couple of years ago. Senator Western is very active in that. And I will tell you, I had farmers that would literally cry. This bill has up to $10,000 grants. In that case, it was scaled and it was a little different program. But some of those farmers would get anywhere from $1,500 to $10,000. I had farmers come up to me and thank me for that piece that we worked on, and they would literally cry because they said that helped them pay a bill, maybe their feed bill, maybe something that they needed to take care of right then. And it also showed a commitment from the state that we are behind our livestock farmers. And we also target this too to specialty crop growers as well, because specialty crop growers and livestock growers don't have a crop insurance that stands behind them. And again, crop insurance does not make those farmers whole, but it's a better safety net than our beef farmers have and our livestock and specialty crops. So I just want to add that in. Senator Westrom too had mentioned in the last committee, we had talked about maybe looking at property tax relief. We went with the grant part of this because some of the specialty crop growers, they just don't own their land a lot of times. And so that was where we felt like this was a better angle, something we could get out quick and targeted. So with that, I will glad to stand for any questions, or we can move on.
Well, thank you, Commissioner. And I was very happy that in my part of the state, we got rain, helped our farmers out. But I also had a number of corn farmers that said the deer were eating a lot of their crop. So it wasn't just it was other factors that were affecting our crop yields as well. I think we'll just move on and hold off for questions till we get done with testifiers. If I could have Mr. Dan Glessing come to the table, please. And Mr. Glessing, if you would state your name for the record and then begin your testimony, please.
Absolutely. Dan Glessing, serve as president of Minnesota Farm Bureau. I'm a dairy farmer from out in Wright County. I hope my kids are mixing TMR right now, actually. But but I represent nearly 30,000 members from all across the state. And, you know, for many, the drought is over. But, you know, for the livestock and specialty crop farmers, it's only just beginning the long-term effects that it's had. We sent a survey out to our members to see and hear some of those the need for it and the long-term effects that this drought did have. And a lot of those I've included in written testimony as well, but some quick stories. You know, hay and forage supplies were starting, the winter supply was starting to be fed back in July and August and has run out or is running out. And that's why the urgency is now for those livestock folks. Other farmers had to move some of their cattle out of state, some liquidated cattle, but some moved cattle out of state to try and prevent themselves from having to sell that lifetime of genetics that they've worked so hard on. And so these grants and loans will help to get those cattle back home where they belong. Specialty crop farmers weren't spared either. Like was mentioned, they don't have the crop insurance like some of the other commodities do. And like was mentioned, that insurance doesn't make you whole, but it helps at least hold the banker off another year. But the specialty crop folks don't have that luxury. And so they want to be in business for their consumers coming up in the future years, just as much as everybody else does. So I'd encourage your support and I would stand for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Glessing. Yeah, we'll hold off on questions, members, until we get through a testimony. If I could, I'm going to go over to the folks that are online now. Miles Koschel from Cass County. Are you online?
I am, Mr. Chair.
There you are. If you would please state your name for the record and begin your testimony, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Miles Koschel. I'm a third generation beef rancher in north central Minnesota, closest to the town of Nimrod. I also serve as the Northeast District Director for Minnesota Farm Bureau. This has been a very difficult year for many farms and ranches, not only across Minnesota, but across the West, as extreme drought has continued to drive every decision we make for the upcoming year. As you've heard already, I've spoken with many producers who feel this is the worst drought that they've had to face and are certain that the drought is not over. I know producers who were forced to sell their entire herds when they ran out of pasture and ran out of hay. I know many producers that bought very expensive hay to feed their cattle with the ultimate question that it could bankrupt them, but the cost of losing genetics and heritage was more than they could bear. On our ranch, we saw hay production decrease by over 2/3 and sold off cattle to try and preserve what little forage we had. When we were unable to bring the amount of hay that we needed to feed our cattle this winter, we were forced to haul half of our cattle out of state to sustain them till we can bring them home, hopefully very soon. My story is like many of the Farm Bureau members I represent, and continuing the fear of the drought lasting well into this coming year, as many producers facing drastic decisions. Farmers and ranchers don't expect the relief to make them whole, but the relief grants will help the challenge facing producers that is out of our control. And the needed loan programs will help where it's needed most. So again, thank you, Senator Westrum, for bringing this bill forward, and look forward to working with the MDA on providing relief for our farmers and ranchers affected by this drought.
Thank you, Mr. Koschel. If you want to stay on the line in case anybody has questions for you, we'd appreciate it. Carol Anderson.
Thank you, Chair Westrum and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Carol Anderson. My husband, Steve, and I farm in Benton County, and I serve as Minnesota Farmers Union Executive Committee Chair. On behalf of Minnesota Farmers Union, thank you for the opportunity to share our strong support for action on drought relief. For our farm, this year's historic drought was a tipping point. I met and married my husband 33 years ago, and we decided to take over my parents' dairy farm. And for every day for 81 years, cows were being milked here every day. We sold our dairy herd because the drought had driven up the price of feed. It was going to be time for us to leave dairying soon at our age, but I'm here today because I don't want my neighbors to be forced out. Whether they're another dairy, an orchard, or a cow-calf operation, that's not a loss just for that family, but it's for the entire community in our state. Quick, easy access to relief could be the difference for some specialty crop and livestock operations making it through this year. Now the details of the package, and I'll keep it simple and short. We strongly support the grants and loans in this bill. First, state rapid response grants administered on a non-competitive basis will help livestock farmers purchase feed and specialty crop producers install a new well or purchase inputs for the upcoming season. Although milk prices are better now, but so are the input costs, with corn over $7 a bushel. The real uncertainty is, as it was mentioned before, will we be in a drought situation again this year? If so, we want to be ready to be of assistance to our farmers. This may not be a silver bullet, but it'll be a meaningful way in getting many producers through to spring. Second, additional funding for the state's Rural Finance Authority will help producers access lower interest loans. I serve on the RFA board, and I offered the motion to allow farmers to access emergency loans due to this historic drought last summer. And I can share that there has been more requests for support. Thank you for your opportunity to testify and to Chair Wenstrom from carrying this proposal. I'm happy to stick around for any questions.
Thank you, Mrs. Anderson, and glad to hear you can stick around. Mr. Edward Uhlenkamp.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much, and members of the committee. My name is Edward Uhlenkamp. I am a farm business management instructor stationed out of Staples and Brainerd Campus, CLC. I have students around mid-Minnesota and up into the northern Arrowhead area. And my farmers that I work with, they have went through some hard times here. First, they had to try to find feed after the drought struck them, and then what kind of feed could they find? Most of them, they look for the dry feed that they could haul in. And once they couldn't get that because it was too high priced, they started to go after the wet feed, being corn silage, beet pulp, wet cake, anything that could sustain their animals. And so just by the hauling factor of a wet feed, it's more than 50% moisture most of the time. So just the cost of hauling is created some issues for those students. The other thing that happened here in Minnesota here too was the quality of the feed that was harvested was not as good as what we normally would. So additional concentrates needed to be hauled in to sustain these animals too. And also I had students that if they didn't have the feed, couldn't get the feed, they did send their cattle out of state, which cost of trucking just to truck those cattle is very expensive, because the a breeding livestock animal, they don't want to push into the trucks as heavy as a slaughter or fat cattle. They can handle a little bit more confinement in those trucks. So thank you for your time and for looking out for our students and farmers here in the state.
Thank you, Mr. Uhlenkamp. And Liz Dwyer.
Hello, everyone. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, we can.
Mr. Chair, committee, thank you for having me today. My name is Liz Dwyer, here with the Land Stewardship Project. I run Dancing the Land Farm in Clearwater, Minnesota. I organically raise a vast variety of market veggies, cut flowers, eggs, pastured lamb, goat, pork, and fiber. And we started the 2021 season to be our biggest year yet. We had 100 CSA members. We were vending at 5 farmers markets, supplying 2 regional wholesalers with both produce and flowers. And we were supplying 2 local co-ops, a handful of restaurants, and we had regular customers dropping by the farm to pick up whatever they needed. But by the beginning of July, our well was sucking bubbles and we were unable to keep up with watering. By late July, what crops we had in the ground were withering. By early August, we'd stopped all but 2 farmers markets and were unable to maintain any of our other accounts. By late August, we had to end our CSA 8 weeks early because we didn't have enough to give. And what little we had, we needed to send to our remaining two markets to try to make a little money. In August as well, we had to send lambs and goats to butcher well before finish weights, months before we normally would because our pasture was just done. By October, we had to stop paying our one employee who understood, but she is uncertain if she will return for after such a hard year with unreliable income, which would be years worth of investment into a highly skilled person lost. By November, my husband took another job to try to help make ends meet, and we started applying for food stamps and county aid to help pay for our daughter's preschool. It was demoralizing because those applications make you feel like a criminal for being poor, and the proof process is exhausting and inefficient. So far, for various issues on the county's end, we've had to restart our application three times, and we are still without aid. By December, we drained our personal savings accounts to pay for the most outstanding of our debts, to buy hay and feed for the winter and to buy seeds and supplies for 2022, most of which we tossed into the air on a credit card, hoping we would catch it when the new year fell with CSA sales. So far, and sales are way down. We lost over $100,000 of revenue in 2021, which is enormous for a tiny farm with razor-thin margins. And as demoralizing as all of that is, I felt okay because I knew that we were in the same boat as every farmer around us. But as I have watched dozens of new center pivots go into the big commodity fields near us over the winter, I realized that many of my neighbors, thankfully, have already been aided by easy access to disaster payments and other resources, but we are not in the same boat. Our farm feeds thousands of families in our community, and yet, because of last year, we can't even afford to fix our insufficient well, let alone approach recovery, because there is no meaningful aid for specialty growers like me. Our story is harsh, and I know we are not the only ones feeling it. Many farmers are still struggling from this past season. The need is great, and I am appreciative that this rapid relief grant would be non-competitive, and I ask that you do support payments of $10,000 per application. It is honestly a drop in the bucket of our need, but we who feed our communities, who guard and protect soil and water, and the possibility of a future for all of our descendants are desperate. This is exactly how a food system breaks. While these funds will not make up for all the costs this season incurred, these grants and loan payments will help keep more farmers on the land, stewarding our soils, feeding our communities, and I hope that you will support us. Thank you for hearing my story, and I will be available to answer questions.
Thank you, Mrs. Dwyer, and keep your head up and know that we are going to be here doing everything we can to help our farming communities out. Mr. Claven, if you would state your name for the record and proceed with the testimony, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Bruce Claven, I represent the Minnesota State Cattlemen's Association. We had a lot of members affected by this drought. My testimony is simple. We wanted to go on the record supporting the bill. Thanks, Senator Weston, for carrying it, and also Commissioner Peterson for all the time he spent going up to meetings and putting this together in the administration. So we simply support the bill, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Claven. And at this point, I'll open it up to any members for questions. Senator Dorning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, all the testifiers. Just really appreciate all your hard work. I grew up on a dairy farm. I know how hard it is to work every day and the struggle you must be feeling and experiencing is just definitely heartbreaking to me too. And but the question I have is to maybe Commissioner Peterson. So in the bill, it talks preference may be given to producers located in counties that include D4. So how many counties are we talking in the D4 area?
Commissioner Peterson.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Dornick, I don't have it exactly. We could share the map with you. We could do that after the committee. We'll send out the map we were looking at is right before August. It would be about five or six counties up in mostly in Senator Johnson's district and Senator Atkey's district. It was kind of a swath just to the east of Senator Eakin's district that really got hit hard by this by the drought.
Senator Dornick, follow up.
Mr. Chair, yes. Commissioner Peterson, just probably another one I'd like to hear. You probably can't get the numbers, but kind of how many farmers are we talking about? That'd be nice to know that too.
Commissioner Peterson.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Dornick, kind of interesting on this bill, a couple other things I just wanted to say. And this bill is a bill Representative Sundin and has taken, and Senator Westrum. We have a larger bill too. I just wanted to mention from the department that also includes a DNR package in it. But this bill, in particular, these grants too. I always said that this is scalable. This is what we put out there. We put out $5 million. You know, if you wanted to go 3 million or 10 million or whatever you want to do, the more money we have, the more farmers we're going to help. If you could, Ms. Dwyer talked about the $10,000 grants, you could do 5,000. Originally, one time we drafted this bill or ideas from the group. I had it at 5,000. Our staff moved it up to 10 after talking with people. So you could scale this, and then it's going to help as many farmers. But if you think about, you know, I said we have 2,000 dairy farmers in the state. We have 3,000 fruit and vegetable farmers. We have, you know, maybe as many as 20,000 total cattle producers in the state. That could include somebody like me who has three goats, you know, too. And we're, you know, trying to target it as much as we can. So it's hard to say, but hopefully that gives you a little bit of number of what would be available. And then again, trying to target it to people, you know, 80%, but they would have to do a narrative and everything too. The House did a thing too, where we would target $1 million of the 5 million that's appropriated. We would do the first million to specialty crops and the first million to livestock. They also carved out 500,000 for people that sell at farmers markets in their marked up version of this bill that is on the floor. And then after they had that 2.5 million left, we would randomize the rest that was left over. My intention kind of was we could see after we did that first million on each, if there was, you know, 5 million for livestock and requests and only 1 million in specialty crops or vice versa, then we would know what we could target. So I don't know if that helps or not, but that's kind of what we're thinking.
Follow up, Senator Gorney.
No, Mr. Chair, I just want to thank you for your work, Commissioner Peterson.
Mr. Chair.
Any other questions from the members here? I'll turn it over to Senator Westrum.
Mr. Chair, I know we're all competing for other meetings or obligations we have, so my intention would be to bring this back up Monday and give us more due time. We had lots of good discussion today, and we try to fill up our agenda, but it's always a little hard to forecast and prognosticate exactly how long things are going to take. So we do not want to short this. I want to thank all the testifiers that could join us here or online, and they're certainly welcome to join us back Monday, but I also wanted to hear from them so we didn't inconvenience them because they've got important work to do on their farms. And so it's good for us to hear them, and we can finish this discussion Monday would be my recommendation.
Yeah, thank you, Senator Westrum. So with that, we will table this bill, and I do want to thank all of our testifiers for your patience and for your testimony. It was what we needed to hear. And with that, we will table the bill. And with no further business in front of us, we will adjourn the meeting today. Thank you.